Hey!
Are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob.
Rob, calling in for your bus, 137569. Grab a pencil and a notepad and take this down.
Oh, you!
F, please take down this important message immediately. And what, pray tell, is wrong with you, F?
Oh, nothing.
Good. Now take this down. There are two radio blocks of detectives. Detective couples. Which includes Nick Carter, The Adventures of Ellery Queen, Mr. and Mrs. North, and Let George Do It, all within the Jack Benny Podcast Network. And the other detective radio block is Popular Detectives, which includes Sam Spade, Michael Shane, Pat Novak for Hire, and Jeff Regan. Private investigator for The Lion's Eye. Enjoy all of these over on the Jack Benny Podcast. I hope you got that down, Effie.
Oh, you!
Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Hello there, this is Diamond. I have a little office on Broadway at 53rd Street. And if you happen to be in the neighborhood sometime, you might notice a sign on the door. It reads, Diamond Detective Agency. Yeah, that's how I make a living, such as it is. I sit at my desk behind that door and wait for someone to come in and hire me. Eventually, trouble works its way into someone's life and gives him a shove in my direction. He tells me about it, and I listen with the attitude of a father confessor. When he's done, I dry my eyes and tell him what I think. What I think really doesn't matter, because it's just a shortcut to $100 a day in expenses. Sure, you can hire a guy for less money, but when I work, it's for a price I figure I'm worth. It's got to be that way because sometimes it works a little dirty, and I have to swallow a lot of pride. I get mixed up in everything from simple divorce to muscle-bound homicide, and when trouble can't find me a client, it starts working on yours truly, and I wind up in a corner. I guess trouble figured I was just about due for a squeeze play because one night last week, two lifers in the state pen started working me into their plans.
Walt, what about it, Walt?
Shut up. Wait until the guards pass. Okay. Drag out the cards like we was playing.
Sure. Is it set for the night?
Yeah, I got the car and everything.
Yeah. We'll head for Florida and get across to Cuba. Oh, I'd be glad to get out of this. 3 lousy years.
Yeah, I got 8 behind me. I used every minute figuring how I'm going to take care of a guy.
Oh, Walsh, you're not going to start that again? Forget it. Be glad you're getting out. You knock off that guy and you'll never make it to Cuba.
Now, look, I figured this whole thing out. I paid out a lot of dough just to make it come off. And when it does, I'm going to kill an ex-cop. And you're going to help me.
Me?
Yeah. Unless you want to rot here.
Oh, you're out of your mind. If this break comes off, it'll be the neatest trick in years. And you want to louse it up by knocking off some guy on the outside?
You can stay here and rot if you want to. The only way I take you along is you help me to get a guy named Diamond.
Yeah, but you waste a lot of time in New York. They'll have the roads covered by then. Look, just because this Diamond guy knocked off your brother in that bank job, you see?
You bust out of here, it's on my terms. Now make up your mind, it's getting late.
Okay, give me the layout.
What is it, Otis?
We just got a call, Lieutenant. 2 prisoners busted out of Sing Sing, killed 2 guards.
Who are they?
Big time. Bob Wells and Charles Walsh.
Charles Walsh?
Yeah, lifer.
I know. Diamond helped send him up before I took over this department. Otis, get Diamond on the phone.
Diamond?
Yeah, Diamond. Who'd you think I meant? Little Red Riding Hood?
Yeah, Lieutenant. Call Diamond, Otis. Bring me my bike card, Otis. Someday I'm going to get good and sore.
What did you say?
Nothing. Nuts.
Now what's the matter?
His office don't answer.
Give me that phone. We've got to find him before Walsh does. Maybe he's over at Helen Asher's house. All right, Otis, stop standing on 1 foot. You can leave.
Miss Asher's residence.
Hello, Francis. This is Lieutenant Levinson. Is Diamond there?
Why, no, sir, but Miss Asher expects him. Oh, wait a moment, sir. Here's Miss Asher. It's Lieutenant Levinson for Mr. Diamond, Miss Helen.
Oh, thank you, Francis. Hello, Walt.
How are you, Helen? I was looking for Rick.
Oh, I was just talking to him. He should be here in about 20 minutes. Why?
Will you have him call me right away?
Something wrong?
No. Just tell him... Tell him an old friend of his is in town, and I have to talk to him about it.
Oh, all right, Walt. I'll tell him.
Well, thanks, Helen.
It'll be at least 20 minutes. He's walking over from his office.
Okay, Diamond, hold it right there. Start walking over to that sedan.
Don't you know it's not polite to point?
Look, laughing boy, I got a big gun in my pocket.
Well, I'm proud of you. I thought it was a crossbow.
Get moving.
Okay. I'd never seen him before. He was a tall guy with a scar on his chin. He walked me over to the sedan and opened the door. He moved in close and shook me down. He relieved me of my .38 and motioned me into the front seat. I slid in and he started to follow, so I kept one leg out in front of me and kicked him in the face. I couldn't get enough leverage to cool him, but it gave me enough time to get out the other door and start making like a miler. I looked over my shoulder and saw him climb out holding a bloody nose. I knew he wouldn't take a shot unless he got close enough to make it count, so when he started after me, I ducked into the subway. I found a dime and went through the turnstile. A train was getting ready to pull out, so I pushed my way on just as the Gonet came down the stairs. He said he wasn't happy to see me go. He didn't even wave goodbye.
Wait a minute, you! Wait! Oh, nuts.
My nose. Got him away from me. How do you like call like that?
Yeah,
you and your swell ideas.
What's the matter?
I waited for Diamond outside his office, like you said. I started to hustle him in the car, and he kicked me in the face.
Oh,
I think my nose is broken.
You stupid. I told you to be careful.
Yeah, sure you did. You think I like getting booted in the nose? Look, if you want Diamond so much, you get him yourself.
Maybe you can tell me how you're going to get to Cuba without me.
Huh? Oh. Well, what do you want me to do now?
I still want Diamond.
Yeah, but he jumped the subway train. How am I supposed to find him?
I found out he's got a dame over on Park Avenue. Pick her up, bring her over here.
Pick her up?
I'd give you that chair for kidnapping.
I'll use her to get Diamond. Pick her up if you want to get out of the country.
Yeah, but a
now,
snitch...
Now, I busted you out of store, I can bust you right back in.
No.
Now, pick her up. Her name is Helen Asher. She lives at 975 Park.
Well, what if someone else is there?
What if there is? You want me to stop over making a fourth for bridge? Get him out of the way and bring the dame to me.
Hello, Otis.
Well, Diamond. Lieutenant's been looking all over the city for you.
I bet you've been a nervous wreck.
I wouldn't care if you fell off the George Washington Bridge, Shamus.
Why, Otis, after all, we've been to each other.
Nuts. You better go on in and see the lieutenant.
Sure. Hey, Sergeant.
Yeah?
When are you going to get some new shoes? If yours turn up any more in front, you'll have to ski to work. Hello, Walt.
Rick, we've been looking all over for you.
Why don't you cops get on the job? It's getting so it isn't safe for a citizen to walk the streets at high noon.
What are you yakking about?
Well, I leave my office to go to see Helen and some goon tries to hold me up.
Well, you're lucky you didn't get it right then. Do you know who busted out of jail last night?
Go on, scare me.
Charles Walsh. He swore if he ever did bust out, he'd get you.
Well, that explains something.
Why, what happened?
This character tries to hustle me into a car, so I shoved my foot in his face and beat it into a subway. But it wasn't Walsh.
Might have been Bob Wells. He busted out with him.
I can tell you in a minute. Got a file on him?
Sure. Otis, bring in the file on Bob Wells.
By the way, Lieutenant.
Oh, Walt, do you mind if I use your phone?
No, go ahead.
I better call Helen. Tell her I'm going to be a little late.
Well, I just talked to her and asked her to have you call.
Where is everybody?
Yes?
Francis?
Oh, Mr. Diamond. Please hurry over here. Something's happened to Miss Asher.
What are you talking about?
Miss Asher's been kidnapped.
What?
Yes, sir. A man came in and made Miss Asher go down to his car at the point of a gun. He also hit me over the head.
Was he a tall man with a scar on his chin?
Yes, sir. That's right.
We'll be right over. Walt, I think the guy that tried to push me around has kidnapped Helen.
Oh, no.
He pulled a gun on her and slugged Francis.
We better get over there.
Now, if Charles Walsh is loose and he's trying to get me, then snatching Helen is a sure way to get me to come around. Hey, where's that file on Bob Wells?
Wait a minute. Otis.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
Haven't you got that file on Wells yet?
Yes, sir. I'm just bringing it in.
Well, step on it. Otis is bringing it in.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
Let me see it.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Oh, shut up, Otis.
This is the guy, all right. He's the one who tried to pick me up. May I take one of these pictures, Walt?
Sure, but what are you going
to
do?
I'll see if I can find him. You go on over and talk to Francis. See if this is the same guy who took Helen. I'm going to go down to Skid Row and talk to a wise old owl who knows about things like this. I got out of the 5th Precinct in a hurry and grabbed a cab for Skid Row. I knew an old deadbeat down there who had a line on every crook in the underworld. And there was just a chance he could tell me where Bob Wells was hiding out. His name was Wilbur Truitt, and he hung out in a shabby dive called the Parrot. Hello, Wilbur.
What? Egad, you at the piano, strike up a chorus of My Buddy, for the wandering boy has returned.
Look, Wilbur,
I would rise and bow from the waist as befits the occasion, but I fear that some sterno I accidentally came in contact with has rusted my spine, and I am forced to remain in a sitting position.
I haven't got time to listen to the routine, Wilbur. I'm looking for someone. Here, take a look at this picture. Ever see this guy?
Unless I have my morning constitutional buck, I can bring nothing into focus but a large bottle and a straw.
Oh, waiter. Waiter, give me a bottle.
You have arrived in the nick of time. I get that wonderful warm glow when you ask for a whole bottle. A snap comparison would be that of a happy mother smiling blissfully at a nursing babe.
Okay, Wilbur, now tell me, do you know this man?
One sip of strength, and I shall have the eyes of a carrot-stuffed feline. Ah. Yes, I can see the gentleman clearly. In fact, my vision has so greatly improved, it begins to take on the functions of an X-ray. For instance, I can readily perceive that the man in question is addicted to false stimulants, and his low brow and squinty eyes tell me that he is indeed a person of some doubtful character.
You're looking in the mirror. Yeah? No, here. Here's this picture.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Bobby Wells. The description is flexible.
Know where I can find him?
Up until yesterday, he was residing at an institution upstate. Sing Sing, I believe. It is very possible that he is hiding out in one of his old haunts on 23rd Street, but I couldn't say for sure.
Oh, why not?
This bottle you purchased entitles you to one of my best guesses. To be absolutely accurate, I would need further inducement. It's the risk, Bucko.
Bring me another jug, bartender.
Ah, bless you. Try looking in a rooming house at 533 West 23rd Street. Now, if you don't mind, I shall forget the necessity for long conversations and begin to concentrate on the work ahead of me. Goodbye, Bucko, and stop in again. Say tomorrow morning if you wake up feeling charitable.
I left Wilbur trying to figure the best way to parlay the two bottles and headed for the address he'd given me. It was a typical apartment house of the district. Four-story building with a high premium insurance policy. I asked the landlady if a Bob Wells lived there, and she told me a man answering his description had taken a room there that morning. She told me he'd gone out a few minutes before, and she let me into his room. I told her to keep a lookout and warn me if he showed. Then I started looking. I tore the place apart, but I didn't come up with a thing. I spotted the phone and started to call Walt, and that's when I saw it. A pad lying by the base of the phone with a heavy imprint left from the writing on the top sheet. I pulled an old trick. I took a pencil and rubbed the lead lightly over the imprint, and up came one telephone number. I dialed it and waited.
Weinberg's Delicatessen.
Oh, is Bob Wells there?
Oh?
Bob Wells.
Never heard of him.
Thanks. Well, it's like that. One minute you think you got a lead hot enough to melt your change purse, and the next you find yourself looking like a tree surgeon in Death Valley. But in my business, it takes a conventional three to strike you out. So I found the address of the delicatessen, and 15 minutes later, I was standing between a smoked herring and a 3-foot salami talking with Mr. Weinberg.
What can I do for you, sir?
Oh, I had talked with you, oh, say 20 minutes ago, about a Mr. Bob Wells.
Bob Wells? Oh, yes. Never heard of him.
Take a look at this picture. Maybe you know the face, not the name.
It's familiar. Yes, I think I've seen him somewhere.
Think hard now. This is important.
Are you a policeman?
Detective.
Ah.
How about it?
Oh, yeah. As long as you're a cop, sure, I remember him. He came to my store last night. I remember because I had already closed and he kept pounding on the door. Finally, I let him in. He was very rude. He bought a lot of groceries, but very rude.
Have you seen him again?
Sure, he came in this morning, bought lox and bagels. Del Road.
Where's your phone?
In the back. Has this Mr. Wells done something?
He left Sing Sing without saying goodbye to the warden. Now, look, I'm going in the back and use your phone. If Wells happens to come in while I'm back there, stall him and come back and tip me off.
I'll do my best, but he better not be rude.
Hey, Walt. I'm in a delicatessen over on 24th Street.
Yeah, Rick.
I traced Wells this far, found out he's been buying food here, probably for Walsh.
You think Walsh is hiding somewhere in the neighborhood?
Yeah, that's my guess. They probably took separate places so they could move in a hurry if one hideout got hot.
I'll be over there right away.
Good.
Comfortable, honey, but no yelling, or I'll have to stuff up that pretty mouth.
I don't understand this. Why did you kidnap me?
I've been having a hard time getting in touch with your boyfriend, Diamond. Figure if his girl's in trouble, he'll come looking.
I don't have a boyfriend.
Sure. Play it straight. But you watch. Tonight I call your butler and tell him we got you. If Diamond wants you alive, he comes to a spot I got picked out. And he comes along.
I don't know any Diamond.
Ain't she cute, Bobby?
Yeah, cute. Want me to fix her so she forgets how to lie?
Nah, I don't care if she claims Diamond's her uncle. Go on down to the delicatessen and get some food. I'm getting hungry.
Okay. But I still think we ought to be getting out of town.
In 1 hour, I call this dame's house. At 12 o'clock, I meet Diamond in the park. Then we get out.
Why do you want to see this Diamond?
Oh, we're old friends, baby. He sent me up for life. And he shot my kid brother full of holes. I just want to see that Diamond gets everything that's coming to him.
You talk too much.
You've got some bad habits yourself. Now get that food. And if you're too lazy to walk downstairs, I'll show you a shortcut. Three floors, straight down. You can jump for it.
Okay, okay.
Good evening, gentlemen. What can Weinberg do for you?
Hey, Lieutenant, that chopped liver sure looks good.
Keep your fat hooks off of that, Otis.
Walt.
Oh, yeah, Rick?
Back here.
All right.
The storekeeper is watching out for Wells. If he shows, he'll come back here and tip us.
I parked the squad car two blocks over. I didn't want Wells or Waltz to think something was up. Where's Otis? Otis!
I'll be right with you, Lieutenant. I'm just buying something to nibble on.
His nibble would grind up a whole cow.
If Wells comes in and spots a cop, he'll take off like a jackrabbit.
Hold it, Walt.
What's the matter?
That guy coming across the street. Looks like Wells.
Oh. Otis, get away from that door.
Huh? I can't hear you, Lieutenant.
A man's coming in the store. Get away from the door.
He is? You want me to hide?
No, you idiot. Just play it smart like you didn't know him. But get away from the door so he'll come in.
Oh, okay, Lieutenant. Leave it to me.
Walt, duck.
Good evening. What can Weinberg do for you?
I'll have a couple of sandwiches.
Hey, try the salami. It's great.
Huh? Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, make it salami.
Coleslaw.
Pickle beer.
Nice night.
Listen, idiot.
Yeah, sure.
Master?
He's doing fine, Walt. Relax.
You live around here?
Oh. Huh? No, just seeing a sick friend.
Maybe that salami ain't such a good idea if your friend's sick. You know, I had an uncle with ulcers. He couldn't touch the stuff. It's too much garlic.
Ketchup?
No. My friend's got a cold.
Oh. Well, then I don't guess it'll hurt him, but... You know, the best thing for a cold is a good mustard plaster. And now, you take the
plaster... Here's your sandwich, just 60 cents.
60? Here you are. Thanks.
Hope your friend gets better.
Yeah.
Whew. Yeah, come on.
How did I do, Lieutenant?
Well, one thing is sure. He thought you were too stupid to recognize him. Can you still see him, Rick?
Yeah. Yeah, he crossed the street and he's starting to walk west.
I'll tell him. He knows you.
Good. When you spot the place, call me here.
Think I should throw a net around the neighborhood?
Not till we spot the hideout.
Right. Hey, Diamond. They got your girl. How are you going to get her out? They'd probably use her for a shield.
That's a good point, Sergeant. Believe me, I've been thinking about it.
Oh, here's the sandwiches.
Swell. Hey. You only got two.
Oh, there was a cop in the delicatessen.
A cop?
Yeah, big stupid one. Listen, I told him I'm getting food for a sick friend, see? And he starts giving me all kinds
you
of remedies.
You sure you weren't tailed?
Tailed? No, who tailed me? Cop stayed in the delicatessen.
Okay. Here, honey. Have a sandwich.
I'm not hungry.
Oh. Suit yourself. Here, Bobby.
Oh, thanks. Hey, when are you going to put in that call to this dame's butler?
Right after we eat. Then we go to the park and wait for Mr. Diamond.
Yeah?
I'm in a drugstore across from the building that Wells went in. It's about a block away. Nifty Drug. Block west on your side of the street. I'll wait inside.
We'll be right down. Come on, Otis. The lieutenant hasn't spotted.
Okay. Thanks for the bagel, Weinberg.
That's all right, officer. Come back again when you can pay for it.
Come on, Otis. Move your big feet.
Okay, okay. Hey, you got any brilliant ideas how we're going to get Helen out of there in one piece?
No, I got to admit I'm stuck. Why don't you get that bear trap mind of yours working and make yourself a hero?
Well, maybe we could start a fire in the building. It'd have to come out.
Oh, swell, swell. There's nothing I'd like better than a well-done girlfriend.
Well, I was trying.
Yeah. Hey.
Hey, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Otis, remind me to kiss you on both cheeks.
Hey, what are you doing? That's a firebox.
I'm turning in an alarm. There.
Oh, we're going to start that fire?
No, but Walsh and Wells won't know there isn't one. When the trucks come and the firemen bust in the place, they'll think it's burning down around their ears.
Yeah, maybe then they won't watch Helen too close, huh?
Yeah, that's the idea. Well, here's the nifty drugstore.
Yeah. Rick. I've been worrying about something.
Yeah, I know. How do we get Helen out?
Yeah.
Well, relax. Otis came up with a solution.
Otis.
Yeah, I turned in a fire alarm. Now, when the trucks get here, you can tell them what's up, and they can go in the building and make like it was on fire.
Well, won't Walsh know it's a phony if he can't smell smoke?
The chief can tell him it's blazing in the basement. When they hit the street, we can get enough firemen to shield Helen and then take Walsh and Wells.
I'll call a precinct and have the block surrounded. We'll need lights if they make a break for it.
Which apartment house are they in?
That one, across the street. After I call the boys, we better go over and find out which room they're in. Quietly clear the rooms on both sides in case the shooting starts before we expect it.
Garlic upsets my stomach.
How about that call?
Yeah, right. What's your phone number, baby?
It's in the book.
Oh. She gonna be troubled, Bobby?
He wants your number. Now, come on. We ain't got all night.
All right. Evergreen 54308.
Oh, that's better. Gotta be more careful, Bobby. Your lip's bleeding.
Yeah. Hey, Walsh. What's that?
Sirens. Maybe that's the cops. If somebody tailed you, you...
I told you I wasn't tailed. Wait, I'll go see. It's fire trucks. They're coming down a block.
I don't smell no smoke.
Hey, they're pulling up in front of this building. The joint must be on fire. Let's get out of here.
Maybe it's the building next to us.
They're bringing the hoses right in front of the door of this joint. I'm getting out.
Sit still. Maybe it ain't a big one. We can't go busting out in the street.
Well, maybe it ain't a big one, but if it is, I don't want to end up like a pound of spare ribs. Why, you... All right, now, come on. Hey, what's that?
Yeah, what is it?
Fire department, we're evacuating the building.
What are we going to do with the dame?
Shove her in that closet. Just a minute, we'll be right with you.
Hurry up, there's a fire in the basement. It's nearing a gas main. The whole place may go up any second.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, step on it.
Okay.
Hey, better step on it, down these stairs.
We can find our way.
Hey, there's a couple of prowl cars.
Yeah. Separate. We'll meet at the other place.
Okay, Walsh, that's fire now. It's the Shamus. Get him, Walsh.
Don't reach for it, Walsh.
I owe you something, Diamond. You all right, Rick?
Yeah, Walsh. He's a worse shot than his brother. Where's Wells?
He made a break for it, but he won't get through.
All right, Wells. You can't get through. Drop your gun.
You won't take me, copper!
Well, that's that. What about Walsh?
He's pretty dead. Come on, I want to find out what happened to Helen. Well, Walt and I went up to the room and found Helen in the closet. We took her downstairs and she cried a little on my shoulder. I like that. Makes me feel so protective. Walt cleaned things up and dropped Helen and me off at her place. An hour later, Helen got back to normal and we relaxed on the couch and forgot about Wells and Walsh. How do you feel now, baby?
Daddy.
Want me to get Francis to fix some dinner for you?
Oh, no, I'm not very hungry. You can have some if you want.
No. Want to play some canasta or something?
But you always said it was a bad 200 game.
Yeah, it is. Well, I forgot my jacks.
Silly.
Want a neck?
Ooh, what you said.
Come here.
No.
Helen.
No, I'm mad.
Mad? What for?
Because those two thugs ruined a wonderful evening.
What's the matter? Want me to go?
Oh, you idiot, of course not. I had a big surprise planned.
You did?
Yes. Believe it or not, I had two wonderful seats for South Pacific, and now it's too late to go.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, baby. I'd love to have seen it.
Me too.
Well, I'm not exactly Ezio Pinza, but I'll try to make it up to you.
Oh, Rick, that's a wonderful idea.
Well, what'll it be?
Some enchanted evening?
Oh, really? Me.
A some enchanted evening. You may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room.
Rick.
What's the matter? I was just trying to make like Pinza.
But, honey, it's safer for you to make like Diamond.
Oh.
And somehow you know. You know even then. That somewhere you'll see her again.
you're not Pinza, but it's wonderful.
Thanks.
Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing. You may hear her laughing across a crowded room.
Oh, really?
And night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will sing in your dreams.
Rick.
Who can explain it? Who can tell you why?
Ricky.
Fools give you answers. Wise men never try.
Oh, Rick.
Oh, honey, what's the matter? I was just falling in love with myself.
Come here.
You never let me finish.
Do you mind?
Oh, well, no. And I'm sure Mr. Pinza doesn't either.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg. Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Paul Fries, and Larry Dobkin. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Richard Diamond is written by Blake Edwards and directed by William P. Rousseau. Now, this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. This program has come to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Now, Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
I hear it said on good authority that a rolling stone gathers no moss. In my case, it is not only moss that I don't gather, but something else which is green, namely loot, with which to buy the little things that make life worth living, like food. I am therefore always available for employment, and when the agency sends me up to the Knickerbocker magazine, I am very happy to accept their $48.50 a week, less withholding. Excuse me, lady, in which of these glass brick kennels do I find Mr. Walter Potteridge?
Just open your ears and head for the biggest noise. That's our Walter.
I'm telling you, Burke, I want those reviews on time.
See what I mean?
Thanks.
But 2 weeks in a row, I've had the business office after me for missing deadlines. I'm not in business for my health, which is lousy. What do you want?
Mr. Potteridge?
It says Potteridge on the door. My cufflinks are initial WP, and I've got Dear Walter tattooed on my right bicep. Yes, I am Mr. Potteridge.
Okay.
Who are you?
Rocky Fortune. The agency sent me over.
Oh, yes.
Well, what do I do?
Do you see this sad, broken-down pseudo-intellectual...
Now, Walter, you're taking unfair advantage of
this me. Miserable object is Burke Whittemore, the drama critic of the Knickerbocker magazine. His reviews are followed with bated breath by middle-aged women from Hohokus to Great Neck. There is only one trouble. He has not seen a play in the last 3 years.
But if he doesn't go to plays, how does he review them?
Oh, he goes. He occupies an aisle seat in the fifth row. He's there in body, but unfortunately, the spirit has been applied internally.
Ah, come on, Walter. Isn't it fitting to pour libations to Dionysius before attending his temple?
I'm not worried about Dionysius. I am concerned about the libations being poured into Burke Whittemore. You get the picture, Mr. Fortune?
He's on the sauce.
That's the general idea.
Mm. My dear man, paralyzed drunk, I can type a better column with my elbow than any other drama critic in the metropolitan area.
Just once, I'd like to see what you can do while sober. All right, now, Fortune, you understand your job.
Look, Mr. Potteridge, I am a great connoisseur of the theater arts. I have sat under the runway of Old Howard in Boston and similar high-tone resorts in Union City, New Jersey. But if you're looking for a drama critic, I think you better get yourself a new boy.
Don't be ridiculous, Fortune. I've got a drama critic. What I want is someone who can keep him from falling on his face.
Oh.
All right, now here's your job. There's a new play opening tonight, Trolley in the Sky by St. John Maloney. Now, you're to stick with Whittemore from now until curtain time. Just keep him sober and don't let him fall asleep in the show. Your seat will be directly behind his on the aisle. And if he starts to show any signs of drooping, give him a good stiff poke in the back of the neck.
Now, see here, Walter.
You think you can manage that, Fortune?
Don't worry, Mr. Partridge. He won't even wink. I got a real dandy rabbit punch. I developed it punching rabbits. I am now remembering that this Burke Whittemore is the fellow known on Broadway as the Kiss of Death. He has not written a review with a kind word in it since Helen Hayes was playing kid parts with bloomers showing. But now he's a rum-dum, senior grade, and I'm hired to make an honest man of him. We head back to Whittemore's office where the job of protecting him from his various follies starts even sooner than I think.
But you can't go in there.
Get
you
away can't. From that door.
Won't you come in, Maloney?
I knew I'd find you hiding in here, Whittemore.
Be careful how you swing that cane.
All right, Maloney, what's the idea of breaking the glass in my door?
Your glass isn't the only thing I'm going to break. Are you planning to cover my opening tonight?
With a shroud.
Whittemore, I'm warning you. I will not create a sensitive, important, searching drama and have a warped Nibelung tear it to shreds with his pointed teeth. After you reviewed my last play, it ran exactly two performances.
A long run for that play. How did it do on the road?
Listen, you snake. If you vent your malevolent spleen on my new one tonight, so help me, I'll kill you. In fact, I don't think I'll even...
Hey, put down that can... Oh. Now, a Malacca cane with a silver head is not as heavy as a bulldozer or as high-powered as a 6-inch shell. But when laid neatly back at the ear, it'll serve... I fold up in a tasteful knot and droop gracefully to the Axminster. Having delivered his ultimatum, St. John Maloney turns on his heel, which happens to be on my stomach at the time, and strides out of the office.
Fortune, you all right?
Oh, what happened to me?
We tried to brain me with his cane and caught you on the backswing. That's the trouble with these modern playwrights. No sense of direction.
I believe you.
Of course, we'll have to do something about that lump on your head.
Shall I call a doctor, Mr. Whittemore?
Oh, nonsense. We'll just cover it up with a hat. Fortune, do you happen to possess a Homburg?
Are you clowning?
Well, then we'll buy you one on the way to the theater. Come on along.
Now, wait a minute. Wait just a minute. Ain't you even going to call the cops?
What for?
Didn't you hear Maloney? He said he was going to kill you.
There isn't a playwright worth his salt on Broadway who hasn't threatened to kill me. Come along, Fortune. Thespis awaits.
Mr. Whittemore, wait. What about your mail? It's been piling up on your desk for days.
Good. Pile it alphabetically and burn it, Alice. Bills, nothing but bills.
But, Mr. Whittemore... Oh, dear. Mr. Fortune, would you take these letters along and try to get him to read them, please?
Okay. Here's one that doesn't smell like a bill. Lavender envelope.
Fortune!
Huh? Oh, coming, Mr. Whittemore. So I slip the letters in my pocket and away we go. First he insists on buying me a Homburg hat and then we head toward the theater. We get there about 40 minutes late. Burke Whittemore collapses in an aisle seat in the first row while I am right behind him in the second. A pint-sized blonde named Valerie Carter is emoting all over the stage, but I'm too busy to pay much attention. Already Burke Whittemore is beginning to slide down in his seat.
Were I yet another, yet were I another's other, yet were I yet...
Hey.
Your other.
Mr. Whittemore, wake up.
Hey. Take me, for I am no other than your own. Else were I another.
Okay, pal, I warned you.
Oh, hey, Fortune, did you have to do that?
Cheer up, Mr. Whittemore, something might happen. Who knows? Her dress might slip. In the first intermission, we struggle through a lobby the size of a phone booth, which is occupied by a cloud of smoke and a few thousand people. Whittemore runs up against a sad little man who looks as if his last friend just bit him. This is Judson Flanagan, the producer.
A great show tonight, Burke, eh? St. John has written a modern masterpiece in verse.
That third-rate carpenter couldn't write a testimonial for an underarm deodorant.
Very witty, Burke.
Do you like it? I'm using it in my review.
Are you writing them in advance now? You've only seen 10 minutes of the play.
My dear man, you tried out in New Haven. A gentle wind wafted the aroma straight into my office.
Listen, Burke, seriously, you've got to be fair. I've got my own money in this show.
You must be mad.
But, Burke, you can't pen it. You just can't. Look, I've done everything I could to please you. I've even starred your favorite actress.
Valerie Carter? She was my favorite actress. You should have given the part to Lassie. This thing is really a dog.
Burke, I'm desperate. If you cut this show to ribbons, I'll kill you.
We leave Flanagan and fight our way down the aisle. Just as we reach our seats, the house lights go down and the stage is dark, too. And as nobody is seated yet, we all kick each other around for a while. Just as I get myself firmly planted, somebody falls in my lap.
Oh! Oh, excuse me, monsieur, but you are in my seat.
Excuse me, lady, but you're in my lap.
Oh, no, this is seat D1.
This is B1, lady.
Oh.
Stick around, it's a great seat.
Oh, no, I could not. Pardon. Pardon me, folks.
She's a small, tight brunette wearing a veil and a mink and smelling of something at $50 an ounce. All in all, she appears to be some dish from where I'm sitting, which at the time is right under her. However, cherchez la femme, I always say. At this point, I notice Burke Whittemore starting to slide again. I reach over and give him the old rigid digit in the back of the neck. Hey, Mr. Whittemore. Hey, wake up. Come on.
Oh, Stella, where art thou? You whose else becomes more present than absent.
Mr. Whittemore, wake up, pal.
Would that you were not another's other, so that I could seek and find you where you are.
I'm telling you, Mr. Whittemore, you gotta wake up. Evidently, I have more power in my index finger than I give myself credit for. Whittemore slides out of his seat and rolls into the aisle. I am down beside him, but it doesn't take me long to head up the aisle to the front of the house, or I flag down Judson Flanagan, the producer.
Shh! This is the reconciliation scene.
It better be the reincarnation scene, pal. Come on outside. I got a flash for you.
Huh?
Whittemore is stiff in the aisle.
Again? Fortune, you help me get him out. We'll get him some black coffee and bring him to.
It'll take more than coffee, Flanagan. He's got a knife buried in his back.
Ted? That's impossible.
Improbable, maybe. But nothing's impossible these days, so you better call the cops.
We can't call the police now. It's only the second act.
Look, Mr. Flanagan, I know it may seem like bad theater, coming so early in the play, I mean, but there's a corpse in the center aisle. Aren't you even interested?
Of course. We'll have to get him out of there before intermission.
I guess I ain't getting through. Burke Whittemore is dead. D-E-D. Look, give me some change and I'll call him myself. Where's the phone?
Right behind you.
Oh. Yeah, but where's the change?
Here you.
Turning my back on Flanagan was like playing Potsy in the Holland Tunnel. He let me have it right on the cowlick with about 2.5 tons of small change in a bag. I figure if I stay on this job much longer, they'll refer to me as Melonhead Fortune, because I'm beginning to feel distinctly squashy behind the ears. When I come to, I'm on the floor of a small closet with my head sharing a bucket with a slightly damp mop. I stagger to my feet and commence banging on the door. Let me out of here. Let me out of here. I got a right to make one telephone. I want my lawyer.
Well, Rocky Fortune, what are you doing in there?
Sergeant Finger of Homicide, as I live and breathe.
What are you doing in this closet?
Look, Sarge, a guy got croaked tonight. A drama critic by the name of Burke Whittemore.
How come you know?
Because I was sitting in the seat right behind him.
Eh? What were you doing there?
I was acting as his bodyguard.
That's a hot one.
I knew it'd break you up. Look, the guy was a lush. His magazine hired me to keep him on a wagon.
He's on the wagon, all right, only now it's a hearse. So you were sitting right behind him when it happened, huh?
Yeah, I was.
And he got the knife right in the back. It's very interesting.
Now, wait a minute.
Why'd you do it, Fortune?
You know something, Sarge? You are a pilgrim in the path of least resistance.
What do you mean by that?
You always pin the rap on the nearest suspect. It saves you so much time.
Why not? You had the perfect opportunity, Rocky.
Sure, but why would I want to do it? You need a motive, Sarge, a motive.
You're right. Why did you do it?
Oh, nuts. Look, why do you pick on me?
You got any better suspects, Rocco?
How about the guy who wrote this turkey tonight? How about it, Maloney? Didn't you threaten to kill Whittemore if he panned your play?
Certainly I did. I'm only sorry that someone beat me to it.
How do we know that someone did?
I wasn't even in the theater when it happened. I can't stand the strain of opening nights. I was in the little bar across the street.
We'll check on that. Okay, Rocky, who else?
The producer, Flanagan. He had a fight with Whittemore at intermission time, just before it happened, Sarge.
That doesn't mean a thing. I never left the front of the theater.
Says who?
Ask my box office man. I was checking receipts with him from the time the second act curtain went up until Fortune came running up the aisle.
Well, now that leaves us right back where we started. Only one suspect, and Rocky, guess who?
Now, take it easy, Finger. Not so fast. Almost anybody in the theater could have done it. The lights were down. All they had to do was walk down the aisle in the dark and... Wait a minute. The brunette.
The brew who?
The brunette who sat in my lap.
What are you doing? Dreaming again?
No, honest, Sarge. She thought I was sitting in her seat. We had a friendly tussle about it, and then it turned out she was looking for D1 instead of B.
When did all this happen?
Right after the start of Act Two, just before Whittemore rolled out in the aisle. Maybe you better chercher la femme.
Where did you say she was sitting?
D1.
But that's impossible. D1 is a house seat. Reserved for critics on opening night.
But I'm positive she... Look, we had an argument about the seat.
Anybody hear the argument? How about you, Miss Carter? Any of the actors notice a commotion down front?
Well, no. But, of course, we were all concentrating on our performances.
Fortune, why don't you quit trying to feed me all these wild stories?
Look, I could prove I was hired as Whittemore's bodyguard. Let me call the magazine, will you? Walter Partridge, a publisher. He'll back me up on it.
Okay, then, Fortune, get Partridge over and tell him to fly. Because if he don't, you're going to be my pigeon on toast.
By this time, Fingers made the whole thing sound so crazy, even I am beginning to wonder if there really was a brunette in my lap. Still, this is no time to give up. I feed a diamond to the backstage pay station and inform Knickerbocker Magazine that they have just lost one drama critic. Furthermore, that unless they wish to lose me too, they'd better send Partridge over on the wing. As I hang up the phone, I find Valerie Carter waiting in a dressing gown that is made of old butterfly wings.
Mr. Fortune.
Yeah.
Mr. Fortune, could you step into my dressing room just a moment? I'd like to talk to you.
So would Sergeant Finger, and he may be getting impatient.
Oh, well?
Well, he ain't got the strange attraction you have. Let the bum wait.
Won't you sit down?
Thanks.
Do you mind if I sit next to you?
It's your couch, honey.
Mr. Fortune, I don't exactly know how to explain this.
You lost something lately?
How did you know?
Well, I didn't think you were looking for sugar just now when I felt that ham in my pocket.
Oh, well, then I suppose I'd better come right out with it.
Yes.
It's a letter.
Oh? A letter to Mr. Whittemore, you mean?
Yes.
Maybe the lavender one with the perfume.
Yes, may I have it?
Why?
Well, you see, Burke, that is, Mr. Whittemore and I were good friends for years.
I'm glad to know he had one friend.
In fact, we were even engaged to be married. But we had a silly little quarrel, and he said that he was going to criticize my performance tonight.
Yeah?
Well, naturally, I got very angry. So I wrote this letter, and I sent it off. And then I regretted it, of course, and I called his secretary to try and intercept it.
And that's how you knew I had it on me?
Yes. You will give it back to me.
You mind if I open the letter first?
Oh, no, please don't. It's so foolish, really, and it has nothing to do with what happened in the theater tonight.
How do I know that?
Well, Mr. Fortune, do I look like a brunette?
Well, no.
And after all, it happened right in the middle of the play. So, may I have the letter, please?
Nope.
Well, I thought you were a gentleman, Mr. Fortune.
Gentlemen are usually dopes. When Finger finds out who the murderer is, you'll get the letter back unopened.
Took you long enough to make that phone call, Fortune.
Take it easy, Sarge. Mr. Partridge is on his way over now, and he'll put me in a clear.
Yeah? It's going to take more than that.
What do you mean?
Fortune, you're in this up to your flapping ears. I've been checking out alibis, and both Flanagan and Maloney are clean. I guess who that leaves.
Name somebody. What about the brunette?
You know, it's strange. Nobody seems to have saw her but you. And a man was sitting in seat D1. Rocky, why don't you save the state the cost of a trial and confess, huh? Maybe I can get you off light with the electric chair.
I tell you, Finger. You are out of your...
Hello.
Mr. Partridge, I am so glad to see you, my boy. Will you tell this guy who I am?
I don't know who you are.
What? Now, wait a minute. Didn't you hire me today to look after Burke Whittemore?
Yes, I did.
And what do you mean by that crack, I don't know who you are?
Apparently, I should have asked for character references first. I hired you to protect Mr. Whittemore, not to let him get stabbed in the back.
All right, Rocky boy, let's go down to the station.
Before you go, Fortune, I'll take Whittemore's mail.
How did you know I had it?
Why, hand it over, Fortune.
Not so fast. Funny thing, you're the second person to ask about that. Why is everybody so anxious to get their mitts on Whittemore's mail? Wouldn't be the lavender letter, would it?
Mr. Fortune!
What lavender letter?
This one, Sarge. Valerie Carter sent it to Whittemore today. Who knows? We might even find a motive inside.
Mr. Fortune, that is not your letter. You have no right.
Sarge, listen to this. Dear Burke, it's no use you're trying to hold me with threats. It's all over between us, and nothing you can say will change my mind. I'm in love with another man, and I advise you not to cross him, Burke. He isn't the kind to let anything stand in his way.
Who's the other man?
Let me read it, will you?
No, you don't. I'll take that.
Here, give me that letter.
Hey, Partridge, what's the big idea?
Grab him, Finger. He's our boy. Before anyone can lay a glove on him, Partridge is across the stage and starting up the iron ladder to the catwalk. Sergeant Finger runs to beat, so I'm the first one up the ladder after him. When I hit the catwalk overhead, he's already touching a match to the ladder.
Stay away from me, Fortune!
Unless you can fly, you're a gone goose, buddy. This catwalk has got a dead end.
Stay away!
I'm coming to get you.
No, you...
Look out, Partridge, you're going over. Partridge!
Fortune, help me. My hands are slipping, Fortune. I can't hold on.
Did you stab Whittemore, did you?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Louder.
I did it. I killed him. Now help me.
You hear that, Finger?
I heard it. My hands, I'm slipping.
All right, Partridge, catch. Alley-oop. I haul Partridge back up on the catwalk and frog march him down to Sergeant Finger.
I could have been killed. Fortune, you're crazy.
All right, Sergeant. You got the confession?
I'll repudiate it. He was threatening my life. That confession will never stand up in the court.
Well, maybe not, Mr. Partridge, but now that I got the man and the motive, I got a hunch we ain't going to need it. There'll be other ways we can pin it on you.
Oh, Walter, I
can't. Hey, Rocky.
What?
You think the dame is mixed up in it, too?
Miss Carter? Nah. If she'd have known Partridge was going to bump him off, sending that letter was the most stupid thing she could do.
Yeah, I guess that's so. Okay, Partridge, let's fly downtown and find you a cage.
So, once again, I am a free man, meaning a man without a job. And all I have to show for it is a new pearl gray Homburg. Miss Carter.
Oh, yes?
About that letter, I'm really sorry. Oh. You see, I was on a spot.
Oh, I did. If only I hadn't written that awful letter, that's all.
Look, it's been a kind of rough evening, and you look a little beat. Would you like me to see you home?
Oh, no. I don't want to put you to any trouble.
Oh, it's not trouble. Just wait till I grab my hat here. B1, B... That's funny, no hat. It must have fallen under the seat.
Oh, well, do you see it now?
Yeah, ow!
What's the matter?
Something stuck me. A bobby pin. Now, how did that get under my seat?
Well, what's so remarkable about that?
Yeah, nothing but bald-headed critics sitting in this row. No dames, except maybe the brunette who sat in my lap. Only why would a brunette be dropping blonde bobby pins around?
She wouldn't. I think you just made that brunette up.
I think maybe she made herself up with a brunette wig.
But who'd want to do a thing like that?
Well, it couldn't have been you. You were on stage.
That's right.
Come to think of it, though, were you there all the time? What about the start of the second act?
No, I wasn't. Any other questions?
Miss Carter, you don't happen to smoke a pipe.
No, I don't.
Then that's a gun in my ribs.
It is?
You did it, not Partridge. You sneaked around
If you mean that I killed Burke Whittemore, yes.
Now, why did Partridge take the rap?
Because he's in love with me.
He must be.
Don't worry. He'll come out all right. He can prove he was somewhere else tonight.
I wish I could say the same.
All right, now. Start walking.
Where?
The stage door, Mr. Fortune.
Yeah, that was pretty clever. Only, don't you think you did this thing the hard way? Why don't you just marry Partridge and tell Whittemore to go whistle up a tree?
I couldn't. Burke threatened me.
With what? Bad review?
With deportation. I'm in this country illegally, Mr. Fortune. Burke threatened to turn me in if I tried to leave him.
Oh, I see. Well, here's the stage door. What now?
Open it.
You got something definite in mind?
I have. They'll find you lying in the alley.
Won't be the first time.
Well, it'll be the last. Open that door.
Okay, here goes.
Miss Carter, oh. I'm glad I caught you. I got a question.
Finger, watch out. Look.
Oh. Hey, what goes?
Finger, I could kiss your lovely, stupid mug.
What for?
I'd be a dead duck if you hadn't figured this thing out.
Figure what out?
That you had the wrong man, of course. This dame was about to knock me over.
Miss Carter? You mean she committed the murder?
What else? Ain't that why you came back?
No, I came back to get her autograph.
Autograph?
Yeah, my kids are nuts about the theater.
Oh, brother.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast included Elaine Ross, Leslie Woods, Stotz Cotsworth, Arnold Moss, James Monks, Roger DeCoven, and Bill Zuckert. Tonight's script was written by Ernest Canoy. Fred Wade directed. Now to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
Next time I get a job dusting plaster statues in a two-bit art shop. Only it turns out somebody figures to dust me off. For good. Naturally, there's a blonde, and she ain't no plaster statue. You can take it from me. I'll see you around. Bye.
This is the NBC Radio Network. Listen 1 hour from now for a special broadcast over most of these stations, in which Sir Stafford Cripps, British Chancellor of the Exchequer, announces and explains his government's decision to devalue the British pound sterling. That's 1 hour from now. Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
Hello.
Who is... Oh.
How is my favorite shipboard acquaintance this evening?
Oh, Simon, you startled me. I can hardly see you through the fog here on deck.
Oh, yes, it is getting thicker, isn't it? But I suppose it's to be expected. Last night, nature went on a binge of moonshine, and this is her foggy morning after.
Oh. Only it's evening.
How can you tell through the fog? You know, you have a very pretty laugh, Barbara. I'll listen for it in all of your pictures from now on.
Thank you, Simon. But I'm not going to make any more pictures. I'm retiring.
Retiring? At the peak of your career?
I'm just tired of pictures, that's all.
Barbara, you'll never be able to run away from it.
What do you mean?
I'm referring to whatever it is that frightens you. Why don't you tell me about it, Barbara?
There's nothing to tell. I'm tired. I need a rest. Please, Simon, don't make me talk about it. There's some things that... Simon, is that someone standing there?
No. No, I don't see anyone. You are nervous.
Simon, if only I could confide in someone, if I could tell you what I...
Perhaps I already know more than you think I do. You're cold.
Yes,
where's your wrap?
It's over there someplace in one of those deck chairs.
I'll find it. I don't see it here, Barbara. Are you sure you... Barbara! Behind you! Look out! Barbara! Barbara! Man overboard! Man overboard!
Maybe you'd like a swim too, Saint.
What?
Oh.
Templar. Mr. Templar.
Hello. I suppose the usual question is, where am I?
Sometimes they awaken from your type of custom-made coma asking, who am I?
Evidently, I wasn't hit quite that hard. I even remember who you are, Dr. Norman. It is Dr. Norman, the celebrated psychiatrist, isn't it?
Yeah, that is very good, Templar, but I'm afraid I must still confine you here to the ship's infirmary for a while. Huh? A possible concussion, you know.
See, tell me, what makes a famous neurologist like you pose as a mere ship's doctor?
I'm really not posing. Partridge, the ship's physician, is ill. Oh. I was within earshot when I heard the familiar call, "Is there a doctor in the house?" And, no, Simon, don't try to get up. I have a flask here if a drink will make you happy.
Oh, not right now, thank you. As I recall, I have some unfinished business to attend to.
Barbara?
Yes. What's she...
They couldn't find her in the fog. She's gone.
Poor Barbara.
Yes, it was a horrible accident.
Horrible, yes. Accident, no.
You mean to say she didn't fall overboard?
She was murdered.
Murdered? But who?
I think I know who. Ooh, my head. It feels like the Aberdeen Proving Grounds.
Yes, I will mix you a sedative. You know, you're not looking very well.
I always look like this when I'm angry. There's only one cure.
Yes, I know. The lady with the scales, known as Madame Justice. You know, Templar, I've been curious about what makes a man like you tick.
Well, I'll tell you. Every 8 days or so, someone winds me up. Right now, I'm wound up tight. Tight with fury.
Well, as a psychiatrist, I would advise you to unwind a bit. Here we are. Now, drink this. It will put you to sleep after a while.
Thank you.
You say you think you know who killed Barbara, Simon.
I was wrong. I do know.
Well, I think you ought to talk to me. Unwind yourself.
You think I need psychiatry, Doctor?
Well, I think you're too taut at the moment. That plus your concussion, it might be dangerous.
Very well, Doctor. I'll unwind. I'll tell you the entire story.
If you don't mind, Simon, here, this will help the rhythm. Huh? It's a metronome. Psychiatrists often use them. But, if you'd rather...
No, I don't mind. I'd never met Barbara Brooks, although I doubt if there's a human being alive who hasn't heard of her or seen her in the movies. I first saw her the day we boarded ship. There was something in her expression, in the way she walked and talked and smiled, that immediately told me here was someone I should know. Her entire demeanor was an attitude of invitation.
A romance.
Fear, Doctor. She was a frightened lady. She wanted someone near her. I walked over to her there on deck and immediately made myself useful. Her steward evidently had become busy elsewhere, so I tipped my hat and said somewhat idiotically, get your program here, lady. You can't tell the staterooms without the numbers.
I beg your pardon?
Your steward seems to have deserted you. Oh. I've sailed this scow before, so if it's the direction to your stateroom you're looking for...
Well, I would like to know.
I would, too. Number, please.
A36 Main Deck.
Thank you very, very much. It's this way. My name's Templar. Simon, for short. And, of course, you're Barbara Brooks. You know, we passed the bar en route to A36 Main Deck. Does an old-fashioned with a new acquaintance sound inviting?
It will, a little later after... He's here on the ship. He's here.
Ooh, there are several... Oh, I see.
He's gone now, turned the corner.
Yeah, I think I saw the man you meant. Certain off-center gentleman named Rader.
Rader? I don't know that name.
No, surely you've heard of Phil Rader. He's just as big a star in his line of work as you are in yours.
What is his line of work?
Well, he's an exterminator of human beings.
Mr. Templar, I'm afraid.
Well, that was obvious from the moment I first saw you. Why don't you tell me about it?
Oh, no, I can't. No, I'd be killed.
It's as good a reason as any for not telling me, but I must warn you, I have a peculiar talent for finding things out for myself.
Oh, no, you mustn't do anything. Please, please.
Hello, Rader.
Well, Miss Saint.
Mm-hmm.
World's getting smaller.
Yes, but I understand you're doing your share to see that it doesn't get overcrowded. Traveling for your health again, or just traveling?
Just traveling.
Rader, why does the mere glimpse of you rounding a corner start a lady's teeth to chattering?
Lady? I don't know any ladies.
Obviously.
Maybe she thought I was someone else.
Maybe. And if you're of a mind to annoy her, you'll wish you were.
Look, Saint, just soak up sunshine on this cruise. Don't go poking in any dark places. Might be bad for you.
Oh, what sort of bad, Raider?
Look, Big Shot, just so there's no misunderstanding, you butt in where you ain't welcome on this cruise and...
Yes?
And I'll kill you.
How is your head, Sam?
Well, it feels as if a regimental crap game was going on inside of it with jet-propelled dice.
You haven't drunk your sedative yet, here.
Oh, thank you. Shall I go on taking the load off of my concussion?
Yes, by all means. I think I was present at the next sequence.
Yes, Doctor, you were. It was the night of that ridiculous costume ball ship's captains are so fond of arranging.
Yes. I remember, we were at the bar together. You were a pirate, I recall.
Yes, and you were a clown. The ball was loaded with clowns, some of them not even aware of their clownishness. But it was gay and sprightly, and the music was good. I remember our conversation, Doctor. You suddenly appeared at my elbow and said in the most shivery, sinister manner...
You know, Templar, I have a confession to make to you.
Well, I'm always interested in confessions, Doctor.
I've had a schoolboy crush on the beautiful Barbara ever since I saw her in pictures first. Tell me, what does one do about it?
Well, I know exactly what I would do if I were you, Doctor.
Yes?
I'd consult the nearest psychiatrist.
At the prices we charge, no thank you. I was hoping you'd cut a fellow in on your acquaintanceship, Templar. But if you won't introduce me... Won't you at least show me which mask she's hiding under? I think I might be able to make my own introduction.
Oh, very well, Doctor. Look for a sylph-like figure in a blue and yellow harlequin costume.
Thank you, Templar, thank you. And if you should ever need a good psychiatrist...
At the prices you charge?
I will be seeing you.
Don't turn around, Mr. Templar. I have a pistol in the small of your back.
Well, now, really, is that any way to enjoy a waltz?
Listen, Saint... And listen hard.
Oh, I'm all ears, except for the small of my back, which feels abnormally large at the moment.
Certain arrangements have been made, Saint. It means a big head of lettuce if they go through.
So?
All the signs say keep out. See that you do. Now, don't turn around. This costume's so pretty, I'd hate to have to put a hole through my pocket.
Well, it's probably just a coincidence, but I've acquired the same regard for the small of my back.
Keep regarding it that way, Saint. Don't let your nose wander where it doesn't belong. And you might begin by forgetting you saw certain people aboard this boat.
See, just tell me how you're going to swing it, Mrs. Miller. Oh, don't be surprised. I'd recognize the notorious Lil Miller's voice on a party line. How are you going to take him, Lil? A palm base or perhaps a marked deck?
This rod has a hair trigger, Saint. Just a touch and you're...
Lil, what's the matter?
That girl there, the one in the holiday
costume. Lil!
You're lucky, Saint. I'd have shot.
Give her ear. Don't crowd.
Crowd her all you want to. She won't mind now.
Is she?
Yes, a stiletto in the back leaves very little doubt. She's dead.
You know, Simon, I would never have pegged the late Mrs. Miller for a professional card sharp. She was anything but the type.
Professional card sharps are always anything but the type, Doctor.
Yeah. And to think I actually played bridge with her myself, with a crook and a hot-headed one at that.
Well, as my old grandmother used to say, Doctor, beware of lady thieves with red hair.
I guess the lady's red hair accounted for the lack of insulation in her temperament. Oh, how does your head feel, Simon?
Better, Doctor. Much better.
You still haven't touched your sedative, you know.
Oh, haven't I?
I think you'll find that it helps, Simon. Here.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, shortly after the murder of Mrs. Miller, Doctor, I called on her bereaved husband and partner in crime. A very interesting visit it was, too.
You have the knack for making all of your visits interesting, Simon. Tell me about it.
Well, I found Miller in the bar, quenching his sorrow with the merry waters of the River of Forgetfulness.
$50,000 in the palm of our hands and beep. No more Lil. No more Lil, no more sucker. No more sucker, beep, no more $50,000.
I see you valued your wife highly. Who was the sucker, Miller?
Ha ha, you're funny.
Tell me, what's Phil Rader cruising for, Miller? And don't tell me it's a coincidence he's on board the same ship.
You get funnier and funnier.
Why is Barbara Brooks so afraid of Rader?
You ain't even warm, Saint. You're a mile wide of the target.
Well, I'd better use a different kind of ammunition then, Miller.
Yeah? Like what?
Like a little murder performed on an unwilling sucker in Reno.
Huh? What do you know about that?
You won't like going back to Reno, Miller. It gets hot in the summertime, especially in the penitentiary.
Rader was with Lil and me on this deal.
All right, Miller, put the zipper on.
Rader, I wasn't going to say anything. Phil, honest, I was just...
Skip it, Miller. I always knew someday you'd show canary yellow. I thought you and I had a little understanding, Saint.
You've got a reputation for wrong thoughts, Rader.
Yeah, but right or wrong, I back my ideas up to the hilt, Saint.
Keep that frog sticker undercover, Rader, or I might take it away from you. And the Dutch courage that rides with it, too.
I'll keep it hidden for now. You just be careful of the places where the lights don't shine, Saint. Come on, Miller, I want to talk with you.
Well, I'll be out in a little while, Phil. I want a drink.
You're drunk enough, Canary. Come on.
You'd better go, Miller. And if you can't talk your way out of it, my regards to the fishes.
And I recall it was shortly after Mr. Rader passed on his second warning that you and I met for the first time professionally.
Yes, Doctor, the very next night.
Well, I am very surprised at you. He'd warned you to stay away from dark places.
Yes, Doctor, so he had. But I'm perverse by nature, and I like to poke around. I was strolling around the deck with Barbara, getting moonburned and trying desperately to get some more information.
So wonderful having you near, Simon. I feel safe.
Safe? I refuse to accept the compliment, particularly on a moonlit night at sea.
I'm referring to danger, Simon, not romance.
They're often the very same thing. I'd like to join the team, Barbara. Why don't you confide in me?
Because if I did, we'd both be dead by morning. I must go now. Good night, Simon.
Good night.
Don't turn around, Templar. I've got a...
I know. A gun pointed at the small of my back.
That's it. Now keep away from Barbara Brooks. Am I clear?
Clear enough. Anything else?
Yeah. Just so it sinks in, Saint. Take this along to remember me by.
Once again, you enter the picture, Dr. Norman. You found me there, lying on the deck, basking in moonlight.
And blood. Go on, Simon. Tell me the rest of it.
Well, after your neat job of vulcanizing me, thus saving me a trip to the ship's doctor and innumerable words of explanation, I hit upon a strategy, and my next visit found me calling in the lion's den. I tell you, you're being made a patsy, Rader. You're on the verge of being demoted back to second-class hoodlum.
I can take care of myself.
Well, I admit a minor sandbagging committed in your good name doesn't amount to much, Rader. But what if the same someone likes your name and decides to use it in other ways?
What do you mean?
I mean murder. You're a lead pipe cinch to pay for one of your own someday, Rader. But meanwhile, how would you feel getting hung for somebody else's shenanigan?
I'd be annoyed.
You sure would.
Look, I'm not rigged up with no murder saint. Lil meant 50 grand to us alive. That's what we figured the sucker was good for.
That's a good enough reason for wanting Lil among the present instead of the late, Rader. Tell me, what was the angle? Blackmail?
Nah, nothing so crude, Saint. I sponsor the party, spot him, finger him, and oil him, and the millers squeeze him through a deck of cards. The guy's a sucker for good-looking dames and card games, that's all.
That sounds very uncomplicated, easy picking.
The guy ain't had the coin long enough to be smart about it.
Who's the guy?
Yeah, he makes water heaters.
The fat man with the diamonds from Passaic.
Yeah, that's a sucker.
I should have tumbled.
Looks like you did. I thought you were out for a bust-up. 50 G's a lot of money, Saint. I figured if I could scare you, it'd be insurance.
How about Barbara Brooks?
Deal me out. I'm not in on whatever the caper is there.
She saw you the day we sailed, and she got scared.
Well, maybe it's because I ain't exactly pretty.
Yeah.
But if you really want to know something, Saint, I'll tell you. I was propositioned on a stunt against that dame a few weeks before we sailed. I turned it down. A big dough, too.
A murder deal?
Yeah, big dough to bump her off. Not for me, though. Nah, she's too prominent. Too much heat on those jobs.
Who made the offer, Rader?
He wasn't exactly interested in leaving his calling card, Saint. Just a John Smith, as far as I'm concerned.
But he had a description, didn't he? Everybody has a description.
Well, sure, sure. He was a medium-sized guy with... Hey, the lights. Who turned them off?
Get down! Rader, are you...
Brown tie. Blue shirt. Brown tie. Blue shirt.
Brown tie, blue shirt. Not a very harmonious color scheme, is it? Thank you, Rader. At least your last earthly utterance was in the direction of good. Thank you.
Brown tie, blue shirts. What does he mean, Simon?
Well, it means that either the man for whom I search isn't a very fastidious dresser, Doctor, or else... Or else he's colorblind. Blue and brown just aren't worn together.
Well, no, they aren't.
I'll take that drink now, Doctor.
Oh, and the sedative I mixed for you. Your concussion.
Later, Doctor, later.
Very well. I can see that you're going to be a very difficult patient. I hope you don't mind drinking out of another medicine glass, eh?
No, right now I prefer it.
Say when?
A little more, Doctor. That's fine. Has such a beautiful color, hasn't it, Doctor?
Yeah, hasn't it, though? Aren't you going to drink it, Simon?
In a moment, Doctor, when I finish my story.
Oh, yes, of course, the story. Barbara's murder was next.
Yes, Barbara was next. But immediately before our last meeting on deck in the fog, Doctor, I found out what she was afraid of.
You did? But how?
It was easy. The steward had some keys. I had some money. The steward has enough now for that chicken ranch he's always dreamed of.
You broke into Barbara's stateroom.
Yes.
Well, what did you find, Simon?
Oh, lingerie, perfume, stockings, and some letters, Doctor. Peculiar letters.
Fan mail?
Yes. Yes, and all from the same fan. A fan she was once engaged to marry, Doctor. A fan who loved her very much and hated her in equal proportions. Who was so torn between love and hate, he had to kill her.
It's schizophrenic.
You should know.
What do you mean?
Well, you know the classifications. You're the doctor.
Oh. Yes. Drink your sedative, Simon.
A colorblind schizophrenic. I don't believe I've ever met one before, Dr. Norman. So colorblind, he mistook the green and orange harlequin costume worn by Lil Miller for the blue and yellow one worn by Barbara.
That is very interesting, Simon.
Poor Lil, if she'd come to the ball as anything but a harlequin, she'd have lived to take in $50,000.
Your sedative, Simon.
You know, you were wrong about Lil's hair, Doctor. It wasn't red, it was brown.
You said it was red.
I wanted to see if you'd agree.
Your sedative.
Yes, of course. Hand it to me, would you, Doctor? It's there alongside the drink. Yeah. No, don't try to tell them apart by their aromas, Doctor. It's obvious that they're different colors. Or can't you tell?
You find it, Saint. I'd like very much for you to drink it.
My doctor, what a pretty purple gun you're wearing. Or is it pink?
Drink up, Tipler. You hardly feel it. It's just a dash of prussic acid.
Dr. Norman, when you give a sedative, you go overboard.
Drink it, Tipler.
Well, you're the doctor. A toast to you, Dr. Norman. To your green shirt, blue tie, and gray handkerchief. None of which match. Here's how.
Oh, my eyes! You threw it in my eyes!
It was a question of your eyes or my stomach, Doctor.
My eyes, I'm blind!
You'll get over it, Doctor, which is more than can be said of me if one of those wild shots of yours should hit me. I know I shouldn't practice medicine without a license, Doctor, any more than you should. But here's a sedative from me to you. Pleasant nightmares, Dr. Norman.
You have been listening to another adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. And now here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a prejudice-filled America, no one would be secure in his job, his business, his church, or his home. Yet racial and religious antagonisms are exploited daily by quacks and adventurers whose followers make up the irresponsible lunatic fringe of American life. Refuse to listen to or spread rumors against any race or religion. Help to stamp out prejudice in our country. Let's judge our neighbors by the character of their lives alone, and not on the basis of their religion or origin. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at the same time for another exciting adventure of the Saint. Good night.
The Saint was written by Michael Cramoy. Our cast included Betty Lou Gerson, Gene Bates, Frank Gerstle, Bill Conrad, and Barney Phillips. The music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Saphir production and is directed by Thomas A. McAvity. Vincent Price is soon to be seen in Harry M. Popkin's production of Champagne for Caesar, co-starring Ronald Coleman. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Merrill Ross. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of the New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, where we have a new Archie Goodwin in the name of Larry Dobkin. So he'll be around for a couple of episodes, maybe three, maybe four, I'm not sure. But anyway, enjoy this New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, and I'll see you all back here next week.
Stay tuned for Nero Wolfe, who follows transcribed in 30 seconds. Later tonight, over most of these NBC stations, Duffy's Tavern comes your way. And on the menu at Duffy's tonight, there's a blue plate special of grilled English language, served up by the delightfully ungrammatical Archie. Plus, laughs garnished with chuckles, brought to you by Archie's remarkable crew. There's no cover charge at Duffy's Tavern, just keep your dial tuned to NBC. And this Sunday means another broadcast of The Big Show. Your guests include Fred Allen, Douglas Fairbanks, Danny Thomas, and many, many more. Tallulah, of course, is your hostess on The Big Show. Ladies and gentlemen, that phone bell means adventure.
Hello?
Hello?
The young man answering the phone is Archie Goodwin. The mountain of a man engaged in deep thought in the oversized armchair is Nero Wolfe.
Mr. Wolfe, we've got a case. I'm not sure whether somebody's going to kill a rabbit or a rabbit is going to kill somebody, but either way, it's going to be murder. Please, Mr. Wolfe, even orchids have to eat.
Phooey.
Yes, sir, Mr. Wolfe will take the case. As a matter of fact, he's working on it right now.
Money, work, bah.
Huh. Greatest detective in the world. Only trouble is, he is.
Ladies and gentlemen, Archie is right. Nero Wolfe is the greatest detective in the world, and the fattest, and the least energetic. Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout, and brought to you over this NBC network in a new series of adventures by Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight, it's the case Nero Wolfe likes to remember as the case of the friendly rabbit. He sometimes prefers his proverb scrambled. It began in lots of places. Let's take a look at a few of them. In particular, the richly appointed library of a man named Veek.
Mr. Veek!
What's happening?
Relax, Haynes. Your blood pressure.
I thought it was a gag, but you really are shutting the club down.
I'm shutting it down.
Why? I got the joint rolling. The suckers are pouring in.
And next week, the governor's committee.
Huh?
It's moving out of Baylor County. Our joint enterprise is in Baylor County. I think the club needs a rest. Crime committees so rarely admire gambling.
Oh, that's different.
So it is. The club needs a rest. You need a vacation. Florida, perhaps?
I don't like Florida.
Pick any place you like, just so long as you get out of reach of a subpoena.
The heat's on, huh, boss?
You've just coined a phrase that may very well catch on. Get out and stay out of the state until I send for you.
Okay, Mr. V. Sure, Mr. V.
Marshal?
Yeah?
That about covers us in Baylor, am I right?
You're right.
The dear governor's dear committee will be sorely disappointed. However, I doubt it'll give up quite so soon.
I wouldn't think so.
Therefore, have the truck driver deliver another shipment of carrots to the rabbit farm, eh, Marshal?
Okay, boss.
Come in, Williams.
Good afternoon, Governor.
Good afternoon. Williams, I'm disturbed.
The crime committee, sir?
It was doing well, very well, and then...
I know, sir.
There's a leak. Someone is passing on confidential information. Who?
That's the problem. Who? Started 3 weeks ago.
A three-man committee? Wilson, McCarthy, Tolliver. One of them, Williams?
I'd stake my life, sir, no.
Then who?
You've forgotten Collier, committee secretary.
You have reason to suspect him?
No, nothing that means anything. Except...
You do suspect him.
And he's been watched, telephone calls checked, mail. I have no reason to suspect him. Except that one thing bothers me.
What's that?
He has a small farm in Greendale County. He rarely went near the place in all the time he's been up here at the Capitol. But that suddenly changed.
3 weeks ago?
Yes, sir. He's been staying at the farm for 3 weeks.
Is there anything unusual about that farm?
Nothing unusual. Except Jimmy Collier has gone in for raising rabbits.
Jimmy.
Who is it? Oh, hello, Clara.
You've been hiding from me.
I've been out here with the rabbits.
Jimmy, what's wrong?
With what?
You.
There's nothing.
You're lying. We grew up together, remember? We live next to each other, Jimmy. We were going to be married.
Hey, wait a minute. We still are, last I heard.
You haven't heard recently enough.
What does that mean?
It means we're not getting married.
But, Clara...
You've been avoiding me. And you've been getting money, lots of money, from someplace. And in a shady way, I feel.
All right, you know. So what?
I've been concerned about your sudden devotion to these rabbits. And the kind of men you've been seeing.
What do you mean?
Like the one up at the house now, waiting for you.
Oh, there's somebody waiting?
That's why I came down here after you.
I'd better get up there.
He's a crook, Jimmy.
Look, I... All right. I sort of got myself in a mess. I needed money and... But it's over, Claire. No more.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure.
I wish I could believe you. For your own sake. But I feel I can't. Not anymore.
Archie.
Yes, Mr. Wolf.
Either stop breathing so heavily or...
Take the evening off?
Stop breathing.
Old Dr. Titmouse wouldn't approve of that.
Who in blue and assorted blazes is old Dr. Titmouse?
My family doctor.
May have escaped your puny mind, but you don't have a family. Answer the phone.
Oh, but it might be a case. It might be very important. It might mean work, Mr. Wolf.
Archie.
W-O-R-K. You've got millions in the bank. Why worry?
Confound you. Do you want me to answer their phone myself?
Now you've got me. No, Mr. Wolf. Couldn't let you knock yourself out lifting a telephone receiver. Nero Wolf's office. Archie Goodwin speaking. What? What? Wait, Mr. Wolf is to go up to Greendale at... Oh, now look, friend. Mr. Wolf does not go anywhere, and that includes Greendale. He wouldn't stir out of the house for anybody short of the... But, I see. Yes, sir, in an hour. Goodbye. Mr. Wolf, brace yourself. You've got an appointment with a Mr. Williams at the Starlight Hotel in Greendale for 1 hour from now.
You're insane.
No, I'll admit I've been tempted.
Fury, were it not for the fact that often the native hue of resolution is sicklied o'er with a pale cast of thought...
Quoting Hamlet will get you no place.
I would fire you.
And then who would drive you to the Starlight Hotel in Greendale?
I'm not going to Greendale.
Nevertheless, in an hour, you will be there.
And who, may I inquire, Cecil?
The governor of the state.
Is that all, Mr. Williams?
That, Mr. Wolfe, is all anyone knows about the situation. Except the guilty man, of course.
An admirably clear summary, Mr. Williams.
Obviously, our meeting here at the hotel was necessary. I couldn't be seen entering your house, nor would it have been advisable for you to visit the governor.
I can appreciate that. You're quite sure I need pay no attention to anyone on the committee except James Collier?
Quite sure.
Police surveillance of Collier is deemed unwise. He has suddenly taken interest in rabbits, but although keeping them may perhaps be considered suspicious, it is hardly in itself of value. You have no other evidence against Collier?
I know we're clutching at straws, Mr. Wolfe, but there is a leak and work is being nullified. Something must be done. Hence the governor's call for you.
Very well, sir. I shall attempt to be more than a man clutching at a straw. I said attempt. Archie, unpack. We shall stay at Greendale near Collier and his rabbits.
Mr. Wolfe, oh, naturally I know that shutting your eyes and pushing your lips in and out indicates you're thinking feverishly, but there's nothing for you to think about.
Three.
Oh, I accept your correction. What are you thinking about?
Hotel beds. They're notoriously flimsy.
Oh, you gave up on the case so soon.
Fiddlesticks. I already know exactly what role the rabbits play in our problem. Therefore,
we're going to drive out to Collier's farm?
You are.
While you test the hotel beds, fine.
It'll be necessary for you to spend the night at Collier's place. You'll drive out there and pretend you've lost a cylinder or something.
Oh, a lost cylinder. Oh, fine.
Confound you, Archie. You can invent something plausible as a pretext, and if you are properly charming, Mr. Collier will, I hope, invite you to stay the night.
And during the night I sleep, happily breathing the fresh country air.
Trust not.
Okay, Mr. Wolf, I accept the assignment. I will learn all I can from Mr. Collier's rabbits. Incidentally, remember the play Harvey?
I do. Why?
Harvey was an invisible rabbit, a figment of a man's imagination. I hope this rabbit venture is more tangible, Mr. Wolf.
It is, Mr. Goodwin. Will you desist and depart?
Okay. Oh, if anyone calls, just say I've gone out to Greendale to cross-examine a rabbit.
Archie, I think you're going to be quite surprised. Yes.
Running out of gas, and me such a big boy. Hello.
Hello?
That tree a friend of yours?
The tree?
Yeah, the one you're clutching.
Oh, I was leaning against it.
It's an idea, but not a good one. Trees are notoriously skittish. The instant you really need one, they're out sowing wild oaks or something.
You sound as if you know a lot about trees.
Oh, I do. I was brought up in one. Look, now, if you really have to lean, I can recommend...
No, thanks.
Huh? I tried. Nice moonlight we're having. My name is Goodwin, and blondes call me Archie.
I'm not blonde.
Brunettes call me Archie, too.
And what do redheads call you?
We'll just skip that, huh? And your name is...
Claire.
Claire. I approve. Now, you may not believe this, but I have just run out of gas. You think I might wangle some up at your house?
My house? You mean Jimmy's house.
All right, I mean Jimmy's house.
Well, I don't know. He might have some.
Now, why don't we go up to the house and ask him?
Well, all right.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy who?
Collier.
I like to be formal when I'm borrowing gas. Would you mind waving your left hand in front of my nose?
Waving, Mike?
Yes, just try it. Don't worry, I won't bite it.
All right. I did.
And very gracefully, too. No ring on the third finger. You're not Mrs. Collier.
There isn't any Mrs. Collier.
Are you applying for the position?
Mr. Goodwin, I...
Now, remember what I confided in you about brunettes.
All right. Archie, you're a little rapid.
Maybe. But I always remember what old Dr. Titmouse said.
What did he say?
Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Old time is still a-flying.
Robert Herrick wrote that.
He did? Dr. Titmouse is a liar. How much farther is this house?
Well, it's just beyond those trees.
What?
Oh,
There was something ran across the path. It brushed my legs. It frightened me.
Must have been a rabbit.
I guess it was. Oh, I'm sorry. There was silly of me.
Oh, don't worry about it. Also, you will have noticed how much more satisfactory I am than a tree. We're clutching at it. Moments of stress, I mean.
Archie.
Mm-hmm. But you'd better let go now.
What I...
And we'll get on to the house. See, I don't need a haircut, and you're not the right type for Delilah anyway.
You mean something by that. Something nasty.
Well, that depends. What I meant is you've already signaled whoever you're supposed to signal. Nothing frightened you back there.
Why?
That scream had a lot of carrying power. Oh, that's the house, huh? Looks peaceful enough.
Archie,
Who were you supposed to warn if anyone came up the path to the house?
Well, no one. Something did frighten
me. Honey, I've been lied to by experts, and you're not one. Ah, think I ought to knock? No, we don't think I ought to knock. Dark inside, except for a handful of moonlight filtering in through the windows. Kind of early for Carly to turn in, isn't it?
I wouldn't know.
Let's go find out. Now, relax, relax. Grandpa's making with the chimes. Time is... 10:00. Oh, it's getting late. Come on. This would be the living room. Filled with early American furniture. The early Americans would be pleased. Nothing here. What's that door lead to?
I don't know.
Or won't tell. Smaller room. Dark as...
Come in. Put the beer on. Oh, you're not the bellboy.
I'm sorry. I should have remembered to bring some beer.
Indeed, and you are?
I'm a fellow guest at this hotel, Mr. Wolf. My name is Veek.
Veek, yes. A criminal of moderate intelligence, any moderate pretensions.
We won't quarrel, Mr. Wolf. I've something to offer you. You and your boy Goodwin didn't drive up to Greendale for the exercise.
I dislike exercise. Shortens life.
James Collier lives nearby. The Governor's Committee on Crime is unhappy. There's been a leakage of information. It hasn't helped them in their work.
But it has helped you.
You wouldn't have left your house in New York on any ordinary job. A request from the Governor, however... Shall we stop fencing?
I don't have to fence with you.
The committee's work doesn't particularly bother me. I've already made my arrangements for retiring from active business, shall I say? However, I don't want you messing around in the meantime.
Indeed.
In your effort to discover how the committee's information leaked out, you might also discover a number of things about me that I prefer to remain undiscovered.
No one has employed me to do anything about you, sir?
Not directly, but indirectly you might have to. I want to insure myself against any such possibility. I want to make a deal with you. I'm ready to supply you with the name of the man responsible for the leak and papers proving his guilt. I have them here.
In return for which you expect...
A quick conclusion to your activities and your return to New York, leaving my name out of your reports.
I'm neither a public official nor a philanthropist. I should do nothing about you unless it becomes necessary. You may remove your hand from your pocket. You wouldn't dare shoot me. Now then, the name of the man.
James Collier.
Proof of his guilt?
These. A series of reports on the committee's meetings in Collier's handwriting.
Thank you. Good night, sir.
Good night. And I hope for your sake that we do not meet again.
Phew. Archie, answer the... Oh. Hello?
Mr. Wolf?
Yes, Archie?
I'm at the Collier place.
Since it takes only 10 minutes to get there, may I congratulate you on your speed?
I've been at the Collier place for nearly an hour.
Doing what?
Oh, meeting Claire for one thing, discussing Rosebud.
Your delay has been explained. Good night.
And for another, I was being on when someone got murdered.
Ah, you laid hands on the murderer?
No, the room was dark. By the time I got Claire untangled from me and started looking for somebody with a gun, he'd left.
I see. And the dead man, of course, is James Collier.
No, sorry.
Found it had to be. Who was he?
Total stranger.
Archie.
I'm not being difficult. There was no identification on him.
Strange. A description.
Early 30s, height maybe 5'10", weight around 175 pounds. hair, blue eyes, a very natty dresser. Suit custom tailored with a built-in shoulder holster. Don Juan shirts. Manicured but very dirty fingernails. And he... Company.
The police?
Mm-hmm.
Very well, you tell them whatever you think proper, without mentioning the governor's committee, of course. You then bid them farewell and come to the hotel.
Can't I say goodbye to Claire, too?
You cannot. Confound you, Archie. Do you think I want to wait up all night?
Police were not happy about letting me go, but I threatened to tell you on them, so they gave up.
You have told me the entire story of what occurred at the Collier Farm, Archie?
Mm-hmm. All details. If you like, I wouldn't mind repeating the parts about Claire.
Phooey.
You may call it phooey, I call it love. By the way, did you know that it was Robert Herrick who wrote that...
Confound you, be quiet.
Okay, push your lips around, but you've missed something.
I have?
Mm-hmm. The burning question of the day. The night, rather.
Which is?
Where is James Collier?
Bah!
Stop buying. The cops want him on suspicion of murder. The way it shapes up, he shot our unknown pal and then headed for the nearest border.
Nonsense.
Mean he didn't shoot our unknown pal?
I mean Collier's whereabouts are not a mystery.
You know where he is?
I know where he is.
I don't believe it. You couldn't know. You haven't been out of the hotel. You haven't had any calls.
Archie, I use my intelligence. If you had used yours instead of holding the girl...
I still wouldn't know where Collier is. Never mind. I'm impressed. What do I do now?
You get Mr. Veek on the phone.
Huh?
He's staying here at the hotel.
Oh, old home week.
Operator.
Mr. Veek, please. Hello, Mr. Veek.
Who is this?
Mr. Wolf wants to speak with you. Just a second. Here you are, sir.
Thank you. Mr. V, where were you at 10 o'clock?
Why, on my way to the hotel.
You checked in at...
10:15, then came directly to your room.
One other question. You have an employee, a man in his early 30s, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and well-dressed. Am I correct?
Yes, that is Marshall.
No, that was Marshall. Good night, sir.
Having done that, whatever it meant, we now go to sleep?
Phooey, we go to the Collier Farm.
Okay, but why?
Because, Archie, the time has come to cross-examine the rabbits. Confound you, Archie. You're not driving a truck. Be careful.
Truck drivers are careful. Also, they are courteous.
Indeed.
Furthermore, they will always stop to help a motorist in time of trouble.
Archie, are you training to become a truck driver, or have you fallen in love with a truck driver's daughter?
Her name is Susie, a hair the color of wheat fields at high noon. Never mind turning purple. I'm about to change the subject. Boss, I have a theory.
Stick to truck drivers.
As follows. Our boy Collier, who had been selling information to Veek, had a change of heart and decided to turn ethical. But Veek's man, Marshall, at Veek's orders, tried to apply pressure, so Collier shot him and headed for Canada.
And the girl's role?
Just to brighten my life. Oh, you mean about her playing sentry? Well, she's in Veek's employ, too.
Phooey.
Don't like my theory.
It's charming. It merely happens to be wrong.
Merely happens to be... Why is it wrong?
Because, Archie, of a dead man's dirty fingernails, Marshall's fingernails.
Oh. Well, you made me bring you to the rabbit hutches. We have arrived. There are the rabbits. Go ahead, cross-examine them.
A good many hutches. A large pen for the rabbits to run about in. Notice that they're all cowering at the far end of the pen, ran as we entered.
That's because they don't like us, maybe, huh?
One of them, however, seems to be friendly. The one up here, and at the corner opposite us.
Oh, yeah, there is one here. He's not friendly, Mr. Wolf.
Indeed?
He's dead. Somebody stove in his skull.
Interesting.
What's interesting about a dead rabbit?
He may be dead now, Archie, but he was friendly. Too friendly.
Claire, this is Mr. Wolf. Mr. Wolf, this is Claire. Claire, I'm Archie.
By a chair, Archie.
A chair. Try this one. Be gentle with it. If you break it, all the early Americans will hate you.
It was her.
Steady.
Well, now then.
Mr. Wolf, I'm dreadfully tired. The police have...
Are idiots.
What?
For example, do they know that you were posted as sentry outside this house in order to warn James Collier of any intrusion?
Well, they don't. I wasn't.
Do they know that James Collier and the dead man Marshall were quarreling?
No.
Do they know that James Collier had armed himself in preparation for this meeting with the gunman?
That isn't true.
It is true.
I don't have to say anything.
You've already said more than enough with your actions, my dear.
What do you mean?
According to Archie's report, and Archie is always meticulously accurate, when you and he opened the door of the room in which the murder took place, you screamed at the shots.
Well, of course. Any girl would scream with...
Then you clung to Archie with sufficient force and for sufficient length of time to prevent him from chasing the murderer. Why? Because you had seen and recognized the murderer as the man you loved.
It was too dark to see anything.
True. Therefore, you didn't have to see the man. You thought you already knew who the killer had to be.
That's a lie.
You're shielding James Collier, aren't you?
I'll never admit any of it. Never.
May not be necessary. Archie.
Yes, Mr. Wolf?
Get hold of that policeman outside and remember what happened to one particular rabbit. Well, look around for freshly dug earth. Midnight.
What are we waiting for?
A return?
Archie's?
No, it'll take him longer.
Well, then whose?
Mr. Veeks, of course, complete with a revolver. Come in, Mr. Veeks.
It couldn't have been easier. No one outside, only the two of you here. I warned you, Wolf.
Fiddlesticks, you merely tried to use me as a prop for an alibi and a rationalization for a motive.
I don't understand.
Mr. Wolf does.
Indeed I do. Did you really think me fool enough to believe your proposal, Mr. Veeks?
It was plausible.
It was nonsense. You pretended you were handing James Collier plus the proofs of his guilt over to me in an effort to keep yourself out of the picture. But your proposition was silly. No matter how much I might have wanted to help you, I would have been powerless once James Collier went before a jury. You're too intelligent not to know that.
That couldn't have given you enough to go on.
It didn't. You yourself gave me more.
I did.
When you came to my room, you told me you knew Mr. Goodwin and I had come to Greendale, checked in at the hotel.
I did.
However, when I phoned you later and asked for an account of your movements between 10 and 10:30, you replied that you had driven to the hotel, signed in, and came directly to my room. Obviously, you already knew of my presence in the hotel. How? Only one way you could have known. You had seen Archie at some time prior to the time you checked in at the hotel, and the only place where Archie was
here, at the farm.
Yes, which told me Mr. Veek had been here at the time of Marshall's death. What was Veek doing here? Only one thing. Murder.
Then he killed the gunman.
No other possibility.
But Jimmy, I thought he did it.
James Collier couldn't have killed Marshall because at the time he was killed, James Collier was already
dead.
Archie!
What's this?
Leave it, Gunny. Let's play. Unthumb that gun first. My arm!
That's nice and cooperative, so... He'll be quiet for a while. A cop is back in the rabbit pen, Mr. Wolf, guarding Collier's grave.
Grave, Archie?
Yeah, with James Collier in it.
Oh, poor Jimmy.
Veek knew the expose was coming. He had to shut Collier up. So he had his gunman, Marshall, kill Collier and bury him in the rabbit run back of the hutches. You spotted that, boss, because of...
A dead rabbit. The others scurried away from the man who bore James Collier's body to that lonely spot. But one rabbit overcame his fear. He was too friendly.
And got killed for it. There was that and...
And the dirty fingernails of Marshall, the gunman who killed and buried James Collier. Your description indicated extreme neatness. The dirty fingernails were a wrong note.
Yeah, indicated he'd been digging. So we know now, don't we? Veek killed his own trigger man to frame a dead man for it. Collier would be thought guilty. He'd be hunted among the living. And all the while... Oh, I'm sorry, Claire.
It's all right, Archie. I didn't love Jimmy. That was all washed up. Mr. Wolf, I understand everything, except why did Jimmy suddenly start staying at the farm with the rabbits?
He knew he'd be watched. He couldn't risk conveying his information by telephone or the mails. Nor could he be seen holding conversation with men who might be traced to Veek. But Who would suspect a truck driver delivering carrots for the rabbits as being the go-between for Jimmy Collier and Veek?
Nero Wolfe. Which is why I hope there's an adequate bed in this house for Mr. Wolfe.
Well, I'm sure I'll be able to find one.
Splendid, Archie. You will have the police remove Mr. Veek, and then...
And then maybe Claire would like to go gathering rosebuds, huh? By moonlight?
I would like to.
Phew. You go up to bed now. I've seen the moonlight more times than I care to remember. However, while you and Miss Claire stroll through the moonlight, Archie...
Yeah?
You might remember that rosebuds have thorns.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Larry Dobkin as Archie Goodwin, and Martha Shaw, Hal Gerard, Herb Butterfield, Howard McNear, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Impolite Corpse. Don Stanley speaking. Chimes mean good times on NBC. There's no cover charge at Duffy's Tavern. Just keep your dial on this NBC station this evening as Archie the Manager, played by Ed Gardner, and his remarkable friends serve up another blue plate special of grilled English language, fresh laughs and whimsy a la mode. Another Friday fun favorite is the delightful Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as the beleaguered Chester A. Riley. Now it's Sam Spade. Then the Magnificent Montague on NBC.
On the beach, you'll see the girls in their bikinis, as cute as ever, but they never get them wet.
The scene has been...
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.